Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic Buckhead skyline where it is dark, gray, and cold. If you want to call, feel free. The telephone number is 347-326-9949. As we have done for the past month or so, we've got candidate Mitch Swain on the line. He is running for the Republican nomination of the 10th District in the state of Georgia, which is an open seat because the current congressman is running for senator. And at this point, it's actually winning. Mitch's campaign is picking up some speed for a couple of reasons. One, he has some bold, fresh ideas, which we have been discussing at length. Second, he's a man of character and integrity. And third, because there are people like us who are willing to stand for the right things. Now, his district is over in Athens, and it goes south all the way almost to, goes into Commerce and places like that. But at any rate, Mitch is on the line, and he's not going to be with us for the entire time, but for a while. So let me just say, good afternoon, Mitch. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jack. How are you today, my friend?
Wonderful. And tell us just a little bit about the campaign.
Well, I'll bring you up to speed a little bit. Obviously, we start our first debates this week. Tomorrow night, the 18th, we'll be in Monroe at the Monroe Community Center. So that'll be our first debate with the GOP candidates. And then we'll be doing a series of debates after that as well for people to follow us with. So looking forward to that, and you're right, we are getting some traction. We'll be doing a large event on the 29th of this month down at the Southern Bell Farm in McDonough, Georgia. We're going to have the Drugstore Cowboys, a local band of actual pharmacists during the day, but they're going to be performing a three-hour concert there, and we're going to get some guest speakers and pastors to come on in as well. So I invite people to come on out and join us that night on the 29th if their Saturday evening is free.
Sounds like a lot of fun. All right, let's start getting to it. My brother Richard's on the line, too. Dick, how are you?
I'm fine, Jack. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing really well. Dick had mentioned that if people want to call, I fail to give out the number sometimes, so I'm going to do it a second time. 347-326-9949 for people that are interested. All right. Mitch, we got stuff that's going on in the Crimea with our good friend John Kerry apologizing essentially by saying, well, we don't want Mr. Putin to think that any of this is personal, like it's something that's on Facebook, for goodness sake. And here we are, the world superpower, only superpower, and we are essentially in full retreat, dismantling the military, when the world is becoming more precarious. We've got that on the one hand. On the other, I just looked at the debt clock, and we've just surpassed $17.5 trillion in debt. When Obama started, it was 10.7. So he has increased our national debt by 61% since he has taken office, which doesn't mean anything to people, but let me tell you something that does. Every taxpayer, people that actually are the ones that pay their taxes, the increase of their debt burden for this, since Obama's taken office, is $74,000 apiece. Now, if that isn't something that would infuriate you, now, I don't like the idea of Michelle Obama, you know, going to China and spending a bunch of money on vacations, and they're on vacation for this, that, and the other, all at our expense, making their children senior staff people so that they can give them salaries for doing it. And it's all going on a credit card that I got to pay interest on at 74 grand. That's my part in it. 74 is yours. 74 is Dick's. That's a bunch. And I want to know, as congressman, what are you going to do about this?
No, that's a great question. No, you've just covered a wide range spectrum of problems. And one
just
of the criticisms I get,
go with it.
Well, you know, but no, I think that you speak to a larger point. You know, whether I'm meeting with individuals, groups of people, Tea Party people, even Democrats, even on occasion, I've done that. The, you know, they say, well, your plan's too big. It's too bold. You can't get it all done. And I try to remind people, our nation wasn't founded on small ideas. It won't sustain on small ones either. But we're going to have to find a comprehensive solution. It's going to have to be a grand plan to solve these grand problems. And for instance, when we talk about balancing the budget, people think that if we just balance the budget, we've made a goal. Well, that's not true. You know, we don't pass budgets just to make payroll on the federal government. We're supposed to pass budgets that lay out the priorities of our nation for the next 5 and 10 years. Where do we want to be in 5 or 10 years? We don't have those conversations. And so I've stood apart now. I'm catching a lot of heat from other politicians, and I won't use their names here. But apparently there's a large whisper campaign going on now because I support a pathway to citizenship, because I reject all narratives that we can just build a wall. We've been talking about building a wall for 27 years, and it hasn't happened. I reject the false notion that we can just deport 12 to 15 million people. That will not happen. And so while people say that sounds good and they support candidates that say that, I take the wider view and say, listen, You don't get the problems delivered to you the way you'd want them. They are what they are. And so we have to find a way to settle that on our terms. So I do the immigration. Speaking to your point about our debt, and our not just the debt of our nation, but the private debt of individuals. You know, as individuals, we own almost $39 trillion now, you, me, and Dick, and others listening. And so our debt is just as sovereign to us as the public debt is to the federal government. So I do a flat tax. I try to get more businesses back. I find a way to solve Social Security where people can keep a small savings account. One-third of their Social Security will be controlled by them in their own individual accounts, where they can save for an early retirement, pay towards health care costs, or apply to a mortgage, because I think homeownership is important. One thing we have
well,
to talk
about
is
this.
Just the
– Let me ask
yes,
you this.
Yes, sir.
We've got – I'm interested in that $74,000 that is extra debt just to take care of Obama's disasters. What are you going to do that will alleviate that and bring us back to zero, and how long will it take?
Okay. On this, and the listeners can judge me for themselves, but if they go to SWAN, S-W-A-N, SWANforAmerica.com, they can see my plan. Bill 4. What I do in Bill 4 is I make the federal government smaller. I close completely the Department of Education at the federal level. I close the Department of Housing and Urban Development, we call it HUD, and I get rid of 40,000 IRS agents because I've gone to a flat tax. With just those three departments being either reduced or completely shut down, we save over $1.2 trillion over 10 years. And the way I do it is I simply pay off, I call it a jackpot handshake, for those employees. I go into a GS-14 working at the federal level, and I say, listen, you've been with the Department of Education for as many years as you have. You're a GS-14. You make $100,000 a year. I'm going to give you a paycheck, a severance check of 2 years' pay. Here's a check for $200,000. That's a lottery ticket to that individual. I'm going to tax them at 15%. Put $8,000 in his personal security account that we just discussed a minute ago, and then whether he's been with us for 6 years or 26 years, whatever his union agreement is for time and service, his pension starts immediately the following month. and I tell them to turn the lights off when they leave the building. By doing that, for less than $5 billion, just for the Department of Education, we close the whole thing, and we save $75,000 the first year and $75 billion the first year and $80 billion every year sequentially after that.
That's a good idea. Now, as far as like the IRS and having a flat tax and shutting it down, I saw something the other day where the IRS now has AK-15 assault weapons. Why in the world would the IRS need assault weapons? They probably don't want to have their agents closed down if they've got assault weapons. But what is that all about, and what is the need? What is the rationale for this? And are these people so entrenched in their bureaucracy that they're not willing to give it up under any circumstance and will literally go to the streets for it?
I've heard nothing about them having the M15s. I can speak generally about all agencies seem to be becoming more militant, and I think that we feel that as a nation. I think the intrusive break-in at Gibson Qatar just 3 years ago was, you know, over imported wood from India.
Right.
And, you know, speak to that.
Pretty
and
far,
certainly,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could have gone in there with just a warrant and just said, I want to see this wood, but instead they stormed the doors. Big assault team, quick reaction force coming in, all geared up with their assault gear. And
but the assault team weren't IRS agents themselves, were they?
No.
Didn't they have ATF or something like that? The FBI
something
do
like
it?
That. Well, our
facts
aren't straight on this, but the spirit of it's bad.
What would be? Can you see under any circumstance why the IRS would need assault weapons? I mean, isn't that just ludicrous?
Well, there is and there isn't. Yes, I can actually give you some rationale for this. You know, remember how we're buying all those hollow point bullets not so long ago? Well, I spoke to a few folks about that. Now, first of all, I'm still opposed to hollow points being used on an American citizen in any fashion. But, you know, we've become such a litigious society, I said to someone who's, you know, in the Marshal Service, I said, aren't you, you know, disturbed by this? He goes, no, Mitch, actually, we train with those hollow points. I said, well, why would you shoot paper with an expensive hollow point? And he said, well, because if we just shoot cheaper slugs and we actually do shoot someone with a hollow point later on, because that's what we're, you know, we're using in our revolvers or something, then that we can be taken to court because people will say, when was the last time you trained with a hollow point weapon, you know, hollow point ammunition? So they have to just train with what they shoot just to cover their butts with lawyers. So I find that sick. Now, but the other thing with the MP5s or the M15s is simply that, or the AR-15s is simply they might buy them in bulk, you know, as a federal agency and just distribute to everyone, saying just like our NATO rifles that, you know, these are what we're all going to shoot, standardize it and save money. But to your bigger point, I think we're always concerned when we think that our revenue enforcement branch of the IRS is, you know, going with assault weapons. I mean, that's just a bad narrative. Like, no way to spin that well. Since they're supposed to be looking after the greater good, and they seem to be not. So
it reminds me of the Sheriff of Nottingham collecting taxes for Prince John at the time of Robin Hood. And it's some very unusual things that are happening, so unusual and so many of them that it seems bizarre, and that just even though we talk about some of these things are you know, subject matters that literally I never thought would come up on any kind of conversation with any kind of intelligent people ever in the United States of America. But sadly, you know, these are the things that we have. And like my brother said, you know, the other week about what is happening in the Crimea and how Putin is just making our president the leader of the free world look like a pathetic weakling. And as much as I dislike Obama, and I do, he is still my president and our leader, and for him to look bad makes all the rest of us look bad as well.
It does unsettle us, you know, not speaking from a position of strength, but it also unsettles our partners. And so when we look to NATO and the European Union, you know, they're very concerned also about their situation. And they like to know that we have their back. And so, you know, your friends, allies, and partners aren't reassured either. And your enemies are emboldened when you come off from a weak narrative. And so our actions have seemed weak on occasion. But we still are the strongest military in the world. But we have to be dependable.
Well, yes, it's the strongest military in the world. What is your concern level at the international situation and the dismantling, essentially, of the military, decreasing the Army by 20% when we have all of these issues and, you know, defunding the Army while you're increasing welfare spending? To me, that seems like the exact wrong thing to do.
All right. Well, there's three things that concern me, right? My top three things with regards to this. One is that we have more unrest, less governance in the world than we've ever had before a world war. That's just a fact. You know, whether I talk about Africa in general, North Africa in particular, and then, you know, we can swing around to the Gulf states and everywhere. So people recognize there's more unrest now than before 9/11. And then the second one that concerns me greatly is that we have more global debt than we have global GDP. So the world owes more money than the world is capable of ever paying off, and yet the debt's still growing. So we can expect, you know, a global collapse, and we can expect our most violent days are not behind us yet in this war, because violence cannot keep going up forever. There's going to be a day that something is misstepped and we get into a shooting war. The other thing is just the competition for resources. You know, much of what Putin's doing in the Crimea is because he wants warm water ports and he wants to have gas lines to sell natural gas to Europe and be able to control that as a choke point. But we see this also out in the Western Pacific these days. One thing I've discovered today that the GOP stands apart with me also on, besides just the dealing with the illegal immigration, is my concerns over nuclear power, specifically because of what's happened in northern Japan at the Fukushima power plant. You know, there we have 5 reactors, 4 total meltdowns. I read an IAEA report the other day, they don't know for sure whether things melted through the containment floors of Station 1 and Station 3, which at that point, it's awful. Now, we're starting to watch our algae off the West Coast. We are seeing increased levels of radiation. Scientists agree the fish are going to consume it. They say, though, it's not harmful to humans now, and I concur. But this is 3 years into this, and if I already have increased radiation this far from Japan on my West Coast, what must it be like for those 38 nations out there closer to Japan? But more importantly, where will it be in 20 years? If we all know for a fact we cannot fix the reactor, you know, we can't fix it. So how do we manage that, and what will that cause out there? Is if there comes a day, and this is what concerns me, if there comes a day that those nations out there, specifically the island ones, that make their living off the ocean, they consume the food as a population, but they also export it for an economy. But if it comes that they can't eat that fish anymore, the fish are dying off, then we as a nation have to be prepared, you know, that there's going to be a hunger issue out there, and we should start becoming an agricultural nation again. And stop turning corn into ethanol and turn it into cornflakes and ship it out to those nations out there. And my GOP tells me I'm completely overreacting. And yet, I've shut down 3 coal plants here in Georgia in the last few years. I'm building another nuclear plant. And I have to just say, you know what? Maybe I'm not comfortable going nuclear now because of what I've seen over there at Fukushima. And, you know, coal may not be the cleanest, but they do have cleaner technology these days. But at the end of the day, if there's a disaster there, all I need is a broom to sweep up the coal dust. And,
A broom will do the job a whole lot better than there's no answer when, you know, the nuclear stuff. All right, listen, I know
but
you've got to go.
Talking.
Just one
yes,
last
sir.
Question
okay.
before we do. What in the world is your take on what happened to that plane in the Pacific?
Oh, I haven't thought, you know, I don't know. You know, you see that. Clearly, it was not an initial shoot down like I thought. I thought it was a catastrophic failure. But I have to believe now at this point that you know, it was human involvement, either the pilot or a hijacker. But I can't, for the life of me, figure out where that thing has gone. So, you know, maybe we'll find out eventually, but it may be years before we find the wreckage, if there is wreckage. So,
Jack, they said today that the pilot's family moved out the day before he took off in this airplane. So there's something's going.
Really? Well, you know,
I know where they are either.
Reality show.
Yeah. Well, hey guys, I've enjoyed.
Mitch, I know you got to go. It's time to tell everybody the website where they can go to again.
It's swanforamerica.com, and we'll have our event schedule. So mark your calendar, Jack. I'd love to have you and Dick show up on the 29th of March, if you can, out at the Southern Bell Farm in McDonough, Georgia, home of Herman Cain, too. So maybe we can get him to show up out there.
Yeah, we'd like that. And that's Swan, S-W-A-N-F-O-R, America, not
yes, sir.
The number four, correct?
Correct. Yes, sir.
All right. Listen, Mitch, we'll talk to you next week, and good luck on your little speech that you're about to give. And, Richard, now close it out.
All right. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, Richard?
Well, John.
It's your former senator, John Kerry, apologized essentially today. At least that's how I interpret what he did when he made the statement, about everything that was going on in the Crimea and his criticism of President Obama. He said, quote, "We hope President Putin will recognize that none of what we're saying is meant as a threat. It's not meant in a personal way." Period. End of quote. What a... Could you even possibly think of Ronald Reagan talking like that? Or Eisenhower? Or John Foster Dulles? Or Kissinger?
Well, first of all, he was not my senator, because I know I never ever voted for him. When he was poor before he married the Heinz woman. I've never been a big Kerry fan, nor have I been a big Pocahontas fan either. But it seems to me that the only thing I remember of late that seemed to be worse was when Obama was bowing to some of these world leaders, and I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. But see, it came off as please don't take this personal, but, you know, we've got to do this. You know, there was a perfect analogy, though, that I just heard on Fox News, and they said, you know, our involvement in this is like a parent is disciplining their child, and we're stepping in to tell them what to do. Now, the European Union doesn't want anything to do with these sanctions, but we're going to do something, and it just seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me, hey, if Europe, who's right there, doesn't want to do anything about it, Why are we getting involved?
Well, we aren't really getting involved. We, you know, think of it this way. Russia has, you know, 50 divisions that are within 100 miles of the Crimea. We don't have 50 divisions anyplace that could do anything, and we're not going to go to a world war over the Crimea. So it's a lot of bluster, but...
And Putin knows that.
Yes. I think he's emboldened because Obama is so weak, and when he stood there, Obama, in front of the United Nations and lied about Benghazi, it demonstrated to the world, to strong and weak leaders, that we have a president that is without character, because they, you know, others knew. And here he is standing up there saying it was because of a spontaneous demonstration. 2 weeks after the Benghazi attack, he went to the whole world and said that. That was the time when he said, you know, that the future doesn't belong to those who criticize the founder of Islam, Muhammad. And, you know, what that has to do about is scary also. But it shows that he's, you know, he's willing to be a con artist and a liar to people in other nations who do not have our best interests at heart. This isn't lying to the Kool-Aid drinkers and to the fools in network media and some of these larger papers who just will not be critical of Obama still. And here we are. And, you know, just one thing after the other, we are in full retreat. And all I can say is this: Jimmy Carter, as weak as he was, seems like a mountain of strength in comparison to Barack Hussein Obama, the worst president that we have ever had, period. I suppose that makes me a racist for saying it's true. But on St. Patrick's Day, as an Irishman whose relatives came over after the Civil War and were dairy farmers in Illinois and later lived in Massachusetts, we don't have anything to do with any of that stuff. But we will tell the truth about exactly who he is and what he is to this great nation that our forefathers fought for, men and women of honor and principle. And now we have the Daily Machine of Chicago in the White House, and corruption is normal, acceptable, because the corruption is in the man himself. He is corrupt, deceitful, and evil. And he's our president, and we still got to live with him for a while. This is a sad, sad time in American history. I'm grateful that we have candidates like Mitch who want to stand for righteousness and are willing to just get out there and do it. And we got 1 minute left, and let me just say this, Dick. I'm glad that there are people like us who get on the radio and say the truth and stand and be people of conviction in a world that has virtually no moral rudder. Yeah. That's really all I've got to say, other than, you know, this is there are some good things happening, and, you know, we're going to get through this. We're not going to be destroyed as a result of this. And we'll talk about this again.
More little comment we end, and that is, go Wichita State.
Well, one thing we know, Barack Obama may miss his national security briefings, but he'll have his brackets filled out. Of that, I can assure you. Let me just say this.
Perfect.
God bless
Perfect.
You. Bless the United States of America.
Please.
And go Florida. Good night.
Go Florida. Yeah, right.